Welcome to the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, where we try to figure out if it would be possible to run Westworld as an actual business. This exercise will cover the entire show, so be aware, spoilers will follow. Also, this is a discussion about running Westworld as a functioning business. It is not a criticism of the story itself, as we do understand there's dramatic license at work here. Please don't send us any hate mail.
Hello again. Welcome back. You're here on the Dollars and Cents of Westworld podcast, and today we're going to be talking about automation, in particular, missing opportunities to automate repetitive tasks. We're going to be talking about work that can be completely automated so that you never have to do it again, work that can be simplified but will still require a human element, and probably the proper way to sand your horse. Tom?
I have no idea where to go with that. How does sanding a horse have anything to do with automation?
good question. And in the first episode, there's a brief moment where we're shown one of the lab technicians who's hand finishing a horse. Now, horses, it seems, are the most common animal in the whole park. So you'd think they'd be finishing a lot of them. So you'd think maybe you could automate this. But in particular, it looks like he's sanding down a horse. And it seems like there's a proper way to do that. You know, if you were just going to make one, maybe you hand sand it, but you wouldn't want to use like a rotary sander, right, Chris?
I would use belt sanding for all my finishing.
But hold it, guys. This is not Woodworking Weekly. Let's come on back.
You can't belt sand a horse.
All right, Pat, where are you trying to go with this one? Because I think you're trying to bring it back.
I want to say I think you could belt sand a horse, but you probably shouldn't. But leaving that aside, your comment about it not being Woodworking Weekly, I think, is on point, sort of, and where I want to go. We're breaking things all the time. You know, there's people being shot, and then they fall through a railing. There's bullet holes in woodworking, and all of these things need to be replaced probably every week. Whenever we're getting new guests in, it's not entirely clear what our cadence is with bringing in new customers, but often, right? And the place can't look like it's already had an apocalypse happen to it. Someone has to be doing that work. Why not automate it?
No, I think that's fair. And when you're talking about automating it and who's going to do the work, I think the next logical step is, well, we don't really need to hire a giant workforce to do so. We kind of built a giant workforce in the hosts. Let's utilize the resources we've got to kind of help us, in your words, kind of give us a better experience for everybody else that's inside the park, all the guests, and it's a more repeatable experience for everybody that comes in the door.
You guys are all staring at me. I don't know why.
Well, considering you're the automation engineer, we assumed you would have something to add there.
Yeah, but the business guy was actually right. He wasn't even BSing.
For once. Wow,
you were
thanks.
Stunned
buddy.
By that unlikely event. That must have been what it was. So now they do automate some things.
Okay, right? Example?
Well, I think we've attached this image to our site, so for people listening, they can go ahead and pull this down. But it's an official Westworld related image about how they have undertakers bury dead hosts, and then from underneath the lab technicians can get to the caskets, and so they've automated the process of getting dead hosts out of the park in a way that doesn't ruin immersion. And it's a repetitive task, you know, hosts are getting shot all the time. There's just many more opportunities that doesn't seem like they've taken advantage of.
It's funny that they have the undertakers take over these dead hosts, because in many of the scenes you see Elsie or some other employee of the company coming by, freezing people, removing the hosts manually. It just doesn't seem that widespread.
You're talking a little bit about trying to keep the guise of the entire park together, rather than, you know, you have a guest stumble upon somebody who's essentially doing maintenance work that I guess could have been automated or could have been dealt with in a better way, right? So from the other side of it, just from the guest experience side, right, you want to make sure that the experience they have is consistent the whole time, rather than somebody coming in and telling them, oh, no, turn around. You didn't, there's nothing, or what does, doesn't look like anything to me. You don't want to have a guest have that type of experience.
I think that's a great point, Tom. I mean, we see the lab technicians coming into the park and, they look like it's more appropriate for them to be on, I don't know, Cowboys and Aliens rather than Westworld. They really do not fit, and no. You don't want to be seeing them as a guest.
Right. So if you instead take some of those hosts, you can maintain the verisimilitude of the entire park atmosphere by you have your undertakers, as Joe mentioned earlier. You have, assuming, carpenters that could go fix some of these damaged buildings. We see that they have what's presumably hosts doing some of the excavation work throughout the park in some later episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're looking to maintain the illusion of everything being realistic, it should be a fairly simple matter to just assign hosts to those tasks with the appropriate ambiance of the career aspect.
Nice.
Send dirty looking people to go do some carpentry work.
It's one interesting part there, though, is if you take a host that was, meant to be doing some sort of repair work overnight or something. We all know that the park doesn't shut down, right? Guests are in the park 24/7. You need to have some sort of, I guess, backup system in order for some other host to essentially get assigned that task out. Because, any guest can essentially grab a host and pull them off their, I guess, quote unquote, storyline or narrative. It seems like even just this small piece that we're talking about, the maintenance part of the park or the, automating the daily tasks that need to happen to run the park, that by itself is a complex system. And we haven't even touched, an actual narrative that guests are supposed to be a part of. We're just talking about keeping the lights on and keeping the doors open so we can, have revenue coming in every week.
Revenue is overrated.
I would like to get paid if I'm going to be working here.
That's why I work for startups.
Ugh. You just got an answer for everything, don't you?
I wish I did. It would make life a lot easier.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
Okay, getting back to the carpentry thing, I think that the narratives run for like 2 weeks or something, and then they reset. Do you need a fresh building every day, or just at the end of the two-week cycle, or whatever the narrative cycle is?
Well, it's a little unclear in the show, which makes sense because, how to run it is not really the point of the show. But it's a little unclear on exactly what they do with getting new guests in. I mean, it stands to reason that, yes, there's got to be some time where they reboot the place. They talk about moving up Hector, I believe, his raid on the town. And you probably don't want the same guest to see that multiple times in their stay or else it ruins some of the immersion. So it implies that there's some kind of cycle like that. But I don't know that we really know that they have a time where they stop the park and do all of their maintenance and repairs and then continue on. We certainly don't see it in our time watching.
I guess the kind of the answer that, or the question then is, that Joe's trying to get at is there some sort of downtime or I guess the other inverse of that would be like an SLA for uptime. Do we have to, is it required that we shut the park down for a day every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever, to do a full reset and everything else? I can see some of the problems that we will probably talk about in other episodes. We could say that, well, if they had some sort of maintenance window, this would maybe not have been a problem. I don't know if it's something that we want to talk about or if it's something we should table for another time, but it's probably a valid case.
I think that it's a worthwhile discussion, even if it doesn't belong in this particular episode. But if there is a time where they actually don't have any guests in the park, I think that makes the argument for host-based automation even more strong. If you can just upload to somebody the woodworking capabilities and all of the other repair capabilities, you've got every host in the park that could go and rebuild a place from the ground up. I would expect that would significantly reduce your downtime, which is time you're not making money because of paying guests.
I just like the fact that you're just going to download something into the host like Neo from the Matrix. You know, I know all of a sudden, you know, the host knows Kung Fu, or in this case, woodworking, but that could be fun.
Well, we do see that Dolores, you know, has the ability to draw, and then we can change out personalities. So it does seem like skill sets are there and presumably transferable.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that you can just upload data to your own workforce to do any professional task and not pay them because they're not real people.
That's a very astute observation. I think the more important thing there is you can still save some significant time, because things that have been noted in the show as taking a considerable amount of time, such as the storylines themselves, which I think we could probably touch on a little bit later, and all the personality essences, you don't need those for the automation work that we're talking about. You're looking at merely needing pure skill-based information dumps for these people. Hosts, not people. Sorry, Joe.
Thank you.
With that in mind, it should be easier to mitigate that downtime need.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't think about that when I was making my comment about the, you know, the complexity of the tool. Maybe it's not that bad, right? I just need to find a random host that isn't doing something, execute the script or whatever it is to give them a whole new set of knowledge or tasks, and, you know, boom, we're done. Or at least, you know, you make the assumption that that host is going to follow those rules.
Right. I mean, I think we primarily only see it during the debugging phases, but you have times when they're removing the emotional component from the host.
Yep, that's fair.
So you don't need that if they're not interacting with guests. So you can streamline this down, give it the bare bones approach, for lack of a better term, and just have them go fix or build or do whatever needs to be done.
So I think most of what we've been focusing on so far is the work that could be completely automated. You know, taking away what I think we're assuming there's some human element to resetting up the park, or we know there's a human element, as Joe pointed out, to removing some of the host bodies. What about some of the automation where there's still a human element?
So to your point about tasks that have some human element, I think this brings back to what I just mentioned earlier about the narratives. We see multiple times in the show there are references to the length of time required in order to build a narrative for a host, which off the top of my head, anyone feel free to correct me here, I believe was in the hundreds and or thousands of hours.
That was just the time to establish a totally new personality for a host.
Right.
I mean, Sizemore's the head of narrative. He had that story that got killed that had dozens of hosts. There was an argument with the head of QA
dozens,
about that.
Yeah.
So the time is just incredible.
Right. So from a narrative perspective alone, if we want to drill down into that, there are branching narrative tools that exist today. If someone is looking to, for example, develop a game that's going to have significant branching narratives, there's already software that helps you automate those whole processes and those decision trees. So that by having this large of an amount of time spent on the narratives and the host personalities, clearly, from a software perspective at least, there's some automation that could be happening that is implied, even if it's not explicitly said, that's being done completely by hand, or, you know,
implicitly by hand, at least.
Yeah. Room for improvement.
Is there a reason that we would want to keep that, though? I'm just playing devil's advocate of, would we want to keep you know, actual employees doing that for, I guess, a quote, more human touch to everything, or are you just viewing that type of stuff as kind of a supplement to actual humans doing it? I feel like we're leading ourselves down to a Skynet route of machines building machines, and I don't know if we want to go there yet.
No, what could possibly go wrong?
There's a whole series of films that explains that, Joe.
And the end of this show, yes.
So, to that point, Tom, I think that there's a need for human interaction in things like the personalities and the narratives. But again, if you have software that can at least aid in automating that process rather than having to write 1,000 lines of code from scratch, which we're not sure if that's exactly what they're doing, but it appears to be the case to some degree. Rather than wasting all that time, and probably there's got to be some narrative structures or decision trees that are replicated from host to host. Most of them probably respond in certain ways to similar inputs. There's no need to continually do that all from hand.
Even though you're making a brand new person and a brand new personality, you have to assume that that person, quote unquote, grew up with the other hosts around it, right? So it probably should have some of the same values or quote unquote beliefs, all the other stuff. So you want people to somewhat talk the same way, have some of the same mannerisms, because then it makes it feel like the host, you came in as a guest to this town, and you know the town is its own living, breathing thing, and you want some cohesion between all of those. I think that's where you're trying to go with, right? Some of the hosts should work the same way. There should be some shared pieces of their behavior or their narratives or whatever it is that drives them, so that there's some cohesion between, you know, the bartender that you talk to and then the other person in the bar should be somewhat aligned. You don't want two completely different experiences.
That sounds like a really incredible idea. Something like a family tree of personality, where you'd see, you know, the deviation over time and the relation between these characters. What a neat idea.
That's actually pretty fair. I mean, we're working on the assumption that the park has been open for how many years now?
Like 34. Something.
It's enough to start, at least, or, I mean, if you're talking in time, right, you've started another generation I was about to say people, sorry, Joe, hosts. That's a pretty interesting point of, could you build an actual kind of progression of these hosts throughout the life and a family tree of showing, okay, these groups of hosts are under this, you know, tree of people and they have this type of behavior. Whereas these other hosts who are part of the same town, but, you know, they grew up on the wrong side of the tracks or whatever it is. Right?
Indiana.
Exactly. Like maybe Indiana.
Here we go.
And, you know, they're part of the same narratives in the same town, but they have different traits and they actually start acting almost more like families. It starts to break, well, not break, but it starts to get into more of the even deeper realism stuff. But that's, to be honest, to me a little frightening, but I think it's an interesting exercise.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's too bad you can't bring that up to Westworld. It's a good idea, though. So what else can be replaced by automation? So we know that the body techs aren't really needed because they should have hosts working on the hosts.
That could work, sure.
So we know that carpentry is needed. I'm not sure what else. And I feel like there is a whole world that we're talking about and we only see such a small part of it. What makes the machine tick?
I imagine that virtually every job that someone had in that time period in real life is a job that you could automate. We see a flash of a blacksmith as we're introduced to the town in the very first episode. So there's another skill. I mean, presumably the horses have horseshoes. Someone's got to make them.
Yeah, I guess they would do that instead of 3D printing everything. Would you want to have these horseshoes 3D printed or have the host make them?
Realism, right? If you're going for immersion from a customer perspective, whether or not the horseshoe that you actually see the blacksmith making is the one that actually gets put on the horse is one question. Right, that's the part that I think you're trying to get at.
Yeah.
If you've got a host going through the process of actually making these things, I don't see a reason why you couldn't put it on the horse. Use that as the actual material. But it feels like, I don't know, 3D printing I didn't think about, but that feels like maybe a good backup solution of something happens and all of a sudden a blacksmith can't make 17 horseshoes in a day and we're down so many, right? We can patch things together in production by getting some 3D printed horseshoes, and you know the guests don't really have to know the difference.
Leave it to the product owner to talk about patching something into production.
Hey, we got to make sure the experience is flawless, man.
To that point, I don't know that we would need to worry about the hosts making those specific items, though. I think that if we are talking about 3D printing them, there's a level of realism that clearly we want to attain. At the same time, there's a level of efficiency that you probably have to balance there. At the end of the day, do these guests care at all about the status of a horseshoe beyond potentially seeing the blacksmith make one? There's no reason why these fake horses need to have horseshoes that need to be replaced. I mean, you're designing this from the ground up. It's inherently machine. We see the insides of some of the hosts throughout the course of the show. We know that we're looking at a thin veneer of human facade over a machine, not people. And there's no reason that we need to obtain full realism for all the aspects. I can totally understand in saying we want to have a blacksmith that looks like he's doing work. And if a guest actually decides they want to pick up a horseshoe, the horseshoe feels legit. But that's your showmanship flash, right? You don't need to have the carpenter fashioning boards from scratch. We might need those hosts to do the actual repair work, but we don't need to, you know, we can still pull the curtain back a little bit, right? And still use the machine technology that we have inside the headquarters to build as much of this as possible and then just go the last half mile.
Leave it to the engineer to just code around it. You're on a roll. I was going to say that back when you were talking about do the horses really need horseshoes. I mean, I think you made a good point. I didn't want to cut you off.
I mean, inherently, if we're doing our jobs properly, we can automate all the things and we can code around it all so we don't need to involve people as much as possible. And this is also how we get Skynet.
That's not Westworld. Westworld is so far away from Skynet, dude.
So I think the question earlier you asked, Joe, was what else could be automated? But I think we've shown here that there's at least a couple of obvious opportunities. And I'd expect that there's many more of them that would show up to people working there, that there'd be all kinds of minutiae that they would need to deal with. I think we've shown that there'd be some value here. Maybe not every single thing should be automated. But if we've got a blacksmith and he's already making things in front of people the real way, it's probably not that hard to extend that if we wanted to, which is an important thing if we're thinking about automation, you know, that it provides value and that it be relatively easy, you know, that it be worth the time invested. So all in all, we've identified some opportunities, not necessarily all of them, where it might make sense to take advantage of automation.
Okay, yeah. In my head, I think back to the scene where Bernard is looking at I want to say the legacy computer system, and then it just starts flashing anomaly detection. That should be automated. Nobody should have to go through two different networks. I don't know why the old network's not decommissioned.
That might be a bit more appropriate for our monitoring discussions later.
Yes.
But absolutely. Yeah, that's a filthy way to do things.
So let me try and build off of your last comment, Pat. So you were talking a little bit about the employees that are there are going to see certain things and say, hey, we could probably automate this. One, to make my job easier, and two, because I'm lazy and I don't want to do this over and over again. So one of the things that we talked about in episode zero is we want to talk about how we would run this if we were the guys actually running the business. So your point there starts with a pretty heavy, probably, workforce of actual employees. And then humans. Over time, thank you, Joe, for the clarification. And then over time, starting to replace it with host-based automation for certain things. Is that the way that we want to start? Or do we want to try and go whole hog on automate as much stuff, like Chris said before, automate all the things at the beginning so that we don't have to pay the upfront cost of employees doing things right away?
Now, I know I'm being set up by the product owner because this is an answer that you can absolutely answer yourself, but I'll answer it anyway, is that there's always a time pressure when you're running a business to deliver, to ship, that there's money you're not going to collect if you take an extra 6 months to automate things before having guests. So I would expect that when they first opened this place, it was pretty rough. You know, they did whatever they could do manually because it's faster. But as you do things over and over again, and assuming that you have the time, you recognize that this is something that you could save time and money on. And the longer you're open as a park, the more those things make sense. Here they've been open for 34 years, and I think it's reasonable after a technology company being open for that long that there'd be an awful lot of automation, probably more than we see.
I'm glad just the product owner didn't have to answer the question. You are correct. You gave the answer that I was looking for too. But I'm glad. It seems like, you know, if we have to keep tally of here's the decisions that we're making when we're running Westworld, we're okay with the decision of we're going to bring in employees up front because we need to get this thing up and running off the ground. And then over time, we're going to try and make it as efficient as possible.
Well, and more specifically, I think what you end up doing is you are constantly reevaluating your processes, looking for
totally fair
areas of improvement. I know Pat and I professionally have had conversations before where we look at what are the man hours being spent on an issue? What would the time be and investment be to automate that process? And what's your return? If you start seeing that there's massive return on something that isn't going to take you long to automate, this is kind of a no-brainer. And as long as you keep constantly reevaluating the process, every time you have, moments to reassess your processes and situations, you can keep making those decisions. You're not going to end up automating everything because, going back to what you both said, sometimes it just doesn't return enough value.
Yeah, ROI isn't there.
If the ROI is not there, don't do it.
There you go.
It's pretty much a safe statement for most things in business.
Yeah.
Like safety. I'm kidding.
That's a totally fair thing to bring up when we've got guns in the park. Yeah, safety. We can skimp on that a little bit.
Yeah, I will definitely be touching on that later.
Okay, good. To find out more about this podcast and for the show notes of this episode, please go to dollarsandcentsofwestworld.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/dollarsandcentsofwestworld and on Twitter at _DASOW.
So with that, I think we've covered pretty much everything that we'd like to regarding automation, things we'd like to see done differently, how we would approach this moving forward. Stay tuned for the next episode where we will be talking about whatever comes up, and maybe we'll eventually get to prostitution next time.